This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Coming up on today's show and Cravings, we have with us in the studio Linton Tapp and Don Marzano, two chefs, and I am Tad Lombardo, and Peter Dillon, our host, is got the day off today, and we will be speaking with you about sustainable farming and taking care of country. Guys, welcome to the show. Linton, we've got a big show today, and Dom, same thing. We've got a lot to get through, so we'll do the best we can. Let's talk sustainable farming and local producers, and get to the good stuff in that regard of things, and then we'll have a break in a little while, but we'll get going through. First, tell us what you're doing at the moment, Linton.
Well, I've just moved back to Melbourne after a hiatus in my home territory of Northern Territory, Darwin. I moved up there, chefing, moved up for love. So I'm back in the most livable city in the world, and I'm so happy to be back. I'm chefing at a cafe called Cheerio at the moment,
yeah,
which enables me to also juggle a part-time media career, you know, hosting a cooking show, My Market Kitchen, along with, you know, coming on great programs like this and contributing to different publications.
And you're a big advocate of farmers, and obviously growing up on a farm, you know, in Northern Territory, so it's something that, you know, I'm a firm believer of, you know, you don't really know something until you walk in that person's shoes.
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, there's that age-old saying, you can take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's so true for me. I only moved away from the properties when I moved to Melbourne 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's still in my blood. My family's still on it. And that's why I'm extremely passionate about the agricultural industry and the aquaculture, but especially the beef industry. You know, it's really close to my heart. That's my upbringing.
Right.
That's my family's business.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm really passionate about everything that happens with them in policy, in weather, things out of their control, you know, and that, I think, spreads across the whole farming community within not only Australia but the world.
That's right. And there's so much working against the farm. You know, forget about the weather and the things you can't control. But, I mean, just for an example, you know, with the situation with milk earlier this year, you just shake your head and wonder why that even happens in the first place. And you know, without food, we have nothing. So, it's just a bit it's a bit unfortunate, I think. But there's things we can do as individuals and as consumers, of course, to try to work that, you know, and turn it around.
Yeah.
Just using the milk situation as an example, there was a huge backlash with regards to that. And people, you know, use their dollar wisely, and it made a difference.
Absolutely. And I think that's really important. You know, we put a lot of pressure on the big retailers. You know, we don't have to name them, but I think we also have to look at ourselves, you know, a bit of self-reflection. Us as consumers are the reason why they're so big,
you
know.
That's right.
And they came about, you know, post World War II and recession in Australia, when we really had to intensify our farming practices to get cheap food and a lot of it really quickly. Now society has developed in a way where we don't need those processes and don't need those suppliers. So we really need to go back to the basics. And,
definitely.
You know, I think Dom can talk about that. You know, he's been a chef for many, many years.
Yeah, definitely. About supporting the locals, supporting the local farmers. We for our production rooms, use Gippsland milk.
And you're from the Craft & Co. in Smith Street in Collingwood. And tell us a little about that.
We do a lot of things from the grassroots. So we do our own cheese production, small goods production. So all the pork and that we use that we put through our small goods production facility, it's all from sustainable farms. And... yeah, we use a lot of that and the milk the same. So that's really, really important to us. But it's not just about supporting those guys. It's also understanding that by doing that, you can get what you... You also get what you pay for as well.
So,
you know, they do put the time and effort in, but that also shines in the product as well.
Definitely.
Which gives you, always gives you a better result.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm at the market pretty much every day, the Paran market, which I'm very fortunate about. And you see the quality of the produce. And then if you go into, you know, a supermarket and you see that quality of produce and difference between night and day, and there's not that much of a difference in price either. I mean, I'd for myself, and I'd be more than happy to pay a little bit more for produce if it's a better quality and better taste as well. I mean, being chefs, you guys know.
Definitely. It's all about taste. If that's what you get when, you know, when you've finished doing what it is that you're doing,
And
you know that straight away.
I think you could comment, all of us, you know, are from the cooking hospitality industry, you know, minimal input for maximum output when you're buying from these lovely bespoke farmers who are, you know, every farmer, and especially small scale farmers, they love their product. You know, the beef farmer from the Gippsland, the dairy farmer, you know, from the New South Wales region, the wheat farmer from the Queensland wheat belt, you know, they all love their product and they all put so much effort into it, and they're giving you, you know, they're giving Dom from Craft & Co. the best they can possibly give. And, you know, as chefs and as people that eat that food, you can really recognize that.
And that's their hard work, their blood, sweat, and tears. And that's what it is. You know, I think a lot of people are sort of detached from that a little bit because of the fact they might be going to a grocery store. I mean, at least at a market, you can actually speak to the person who's selling it and you get that expertise and that knowledge. And, and I think, you know, ultimately people do crave that. People do want to know about the provenance of where their food comes from and you know, the ethical side and how it was grown. And it's such an important part of life now, I think, is at least in Australia, maybe not in other parts of the world.
Exactly, and understanding where it comes from, what went into it, gives you an appreciation when you do, kind of, when we serve it up in the restaurant and can give it to our customers and say, hey, listen, you know, we know this, we know where this came from, this is what we did
with it. And I think Australia in general, we've developed this mentality where we are really focused on the provenance of food. Like, I was doing some pop-up interviews in Sydney once in a grocery store, and, you know, met a few foreign nationals, mainly from the European countries and the UK. They couldn't care less where the food was coming from. And, you know, I was like, oh, why is that? And that's because the countries where they have from were all net importers, whereas Australia is a net exporter. So we're very fortunate about the food that we have.
Definitely.
We have an abundance of it, but we have to really put this focus back onto not only the provenance of the food, but the community of the food, you know, and back to our farmers, the sustainability, and making sure they're getting the proceeds so they can keep putting it back into their business.
And that's what it is too. I mean, at the end of the day, they're trying to make a living as well, and it's such a tough industry to be in. And the problem is like you say, you know, if we lose our farmers, you know, all the farms and all that local, the producers, I mean, we're in trouble. You know, you don't want to be in that sort of situation. So I think it's something that people need to really try to get a grasp on and try to understand a little bit better, you know, and make better informed decisions when buying things.
Absolutely. Like, Dom, you're probably in the best position to comment on it. Like, fads, when people, the consumers are following fads, you know, that can really cripple an industry.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the wheat farmers, I think. Yeah. You know, don't get me wrong, there are definitely celiacs out there.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I think gluten-free has become very fashionable at the moment. There are some health benefits to it, but at the end of the day, you're talking about a percentage of a community that stopped eating gluten because it's been, you know, sort of vilified for whatever reasons, and then that can have a flow-on effect down the way.
I want to talk more about that. We're just going to take a quick break and listen to some community service announcements, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Manny Fellel, and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Cravings. In the studio, we have Linton Tapp and Dom Marzano. Sorry about that. A lot of names to remember. And we're talking about sustainable foods, farmers, things like that. And we were, before the break, talking about consumers having informed choices and things that we can do at home to make sure that we are giving the respect to the local farmers and local producers and doing that. Any suggestions, Linton, that you can think of that, that might be helpful for people that might wonder how to do that from that point of view?
Well, the very basics of it is back to the farmers markets, back to basics, hey?
Yeah.
You know, not only are the farmers markets generally what's in season, you know, we have to get, I think that raises a key issue itself is seasonality. You know, with the big supermarket chains, we've gotten used to seeing oranges on the, you know, on the shelves year round, and potatoes and pumpkins, whereas, you know, most fruits and vegetables and even seafoods, for that matter, and meat, you know, we talk about spring lamb should be only eaten in spring.
Right.
So when it's at its best.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. You know, and for that reason, most ingredients have about 2 to 3 month life.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then that's when our cookery should come in, our chef skills and all that about preserving, curing, you know, and making those ingredients last, not just looking at another area within Australia or looking at dark cool rooms or importing to keep it on the shelf.
Right. And I think too, you know, doing things like you do at your work, Dom, the Craft & Co.
We preserve everything.
Yeah.
We make the most of every season and we just preserve that product and make enough for the year.
Yeah.
Look, I'm blessed with space. So I can do that.
Yeah.
But I'm also cooking for a lot of people. But at home, you know, a dark cupboard can be filled with jars and preserving's fun.
Yeah,
as well. It's not just that. It's fun. It's a good way to get connected to your food. It's a very simple process. Whichever product you decide it is to preserve. I mean, we do classes in salami making, and they're getting more and more popular. People are loving that. The first year they have a go, they just kind of want to get over the nerves. And the next year they're making for themselves for the year. Next thing you know, you speak to them a couple of years later, they're making for their friends, their family. And I mean, it's encouraging that that kind of mentality with people.
Yeah.
Understanding, you know, we talk about oranges.
Yeah.
Buying them in winter, making enough marmalade for the year. It's not a lot. Like, really, if you look at it.
No.
If you made 3 kilos of marmalade, I'm sure that's breakfast for the year.
And that's for the whole family for the year.
And it's not, you know, they're not hard things to do. And yeah, that's a really, really good point about seasonality, understanding what's around.
Yeah.
But it's not just that. Like, if you go into a supermarket and even you're just going down your dry store, you know, your dry aisles, you're looking at your grains and your pulses, and everything's imported, your dried fruits.
That's
but
right.
In Australia, we do awesome biodynamics.
Yeah. Mm.
Grains, pulses, everything. Mm. The dried fruits, we've got really good regions and areas that do a really good job, even Victoria.
Yeah, well, you know, Shepparton's a really big region for
exactly.
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Where SPC originated.
Yeah, yep. Sunraysia, all that. They do all these really beautiful fruits, and then you go into a supermarket shelf and you're looking and you're going, made in Turkey.
Yeah,
really, it's about availability and price. But if we can support these guys and keep these areas going, it's going to be good for our future. So,
and even you know, to the point, you guys are doing an artisan Christmas market.
Yeah,
is that tomorrow?
That's tomorrow. So we'll be hosting 15 producers.
Yeah.
Time? I want to come.
Yeah,
10 till 2.
10 to 2.
We're going to be. You know, I guess if you want to do your Christmas shopping, you've got a foodie member of your family, you can probably friends just come down and buy for them. There's going to be, we've got you know, pudding, we've got silver penny puddings, we've got chocolate producers, books for cooks are going to be there with books on cooking and about alcohol and things like
Tim
that.
Tim and Amanda
it's going to be a really good day. We're going to be launching our limoncello.
Ooh.
Oh, so, beautiful.
So we've had the lemon skin steeping.
Is that your parents' secret recipe?
Yeah. it is actually from a bit of a generational thing. So talking with Sebastian, our stiller, and just sort of working out kind of how we were going to do this, and it was good. And then it evolved into my recipe.
How you're going to get him
to take it over, but you know.
Get him to do it without giving your recipe over.
It's not a secret.
Is this like the Coca-Cola recipe?
Yeah, no, the kernels.
Yeah,
secret sauce. No, I mean, you know, we'll be launching our limoncello batch two of our gin.
Yeah.
So batch two of our gin is going to have a bit more of a summer flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
Come down, you know, you can sample some of our salami that we made inspired by the gin.
Right.
Also the cheeses that we make in our production room. But yeah, there's lots of things that go on in the craft and co.
I think that's to continue on with what we can do as consumers, we have to, what Dom's doing from a restaurant point of view and a business point of view, we have to start going back into our household, as you said, making stuff. We lost that connection with our grandmas and nonnas, unfortunately. Yeah. And, like, we're used to, you know, packet cake mixes and all these pre-made things, which were cool in the 70s and 80s.
But there is a big movement. There's a big movement of people who do want to get back to doing it. Like, I mean, at these classes, you know, that we hold at the Craft & Co., we have people coming from all kind of walks, and it might be, I mean, the last one I did was the pasta class, and we were just talking. Next thing you know, there's someone there who's talking about, she was German, she's talking about how her grandma made sauerkraut.
Right.
You know, a premium sauerkraut, you know, to purchase is one thing, but to kind of make those things at home, buy the cabbage, do it as, you know, as
but
part
it's
of
interesting.
Your larder for home, it's pretty
it
special.
Is. And even from the point of doing it, your own, you know, you're in control of what ingredients go into that cake mix, for example.
Yeah.
Have you ever looked at the back of the ingredients list? You know, there's things on it, you don't even know what they are. They're just numbered.
And
usually they're preservatives, colors, things like the flavor. So you're ingesting a lot of things that, you know, can't be good for you.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you go back to that basics of cooking where you are making it yourself, you eliminate those preservatives. Yep. And, you know, you can still make cakes, but you're not getting these, you know, added fillers of refined food that is clogging up our systems this day and age. Everyone talks about a healthy diet. If you just go back to the basics of cooking and you are making things from scratch, even if it be a dessert, it's still going to be better for you than if you're buying it from the supermarket.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And you get a sense of pride when you make something yourself at home, I think, you know.
Even your delicious chocolates, you know. Yeah. You know the ingredients that are going in, they're going to be a lot better for you than super refined, creamy stuff you buy off the shelf.
That's right. And the shelf life reflects on that, too. So it's one of those things that has a big impact on it. And you want to eat them when they're fresh. You don't want them to eat them, you know, 3 months later, 4 months later. It's silly. It doesn't make sense. So, but it's important
when they're at their best.
Unless it's pickled onions.
Yeah. I know some of those things are best left in
exactly. That's right.
A couple more months.
But it is trying to use seasonal things. And I know from my own point of view, I do try to do that with the products that I make.
Yeah.
And trying to be sustainable as much as possible. Mm. And what do you guys do as far as being chefs and that sustainability side of it? You know, recycling or just making sure the products that you're using are from sustainable sources, things like that. I mean, that's a big part of understanding, you know, where our food's coming from as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the diet that I grew up with as a kid, like, we used to preserve everything.
Yeah.
I used to keep all the jars, the bottles. We used to make our own sauces and preserves and things, and that's how we used to kind of live, majority of the food that we used to eat. And I try to do that now and encourage my kids. And, I mean, for us, one or two dinners a week is something similar as, like, pasta and our passata sauce.
Sure. Mm.
But for me to make that and enough for the year costs me about, sort of, I don't know, maybe about $80.
Right.
And then I turn that all into sauce. That sauce is then, you know, stored in bottles under the house, and the process is a day, and it's a really good day. Mm. And now I've got my neighbors coming, my friends coming, my kids' school teachers coming,
things of course.
Like this. But, you know, like, you look at it and then you think about the economics of it and what it is and what it means and what I'm doing for my kids as well, for my family. I'm like, wow, that's something that, you know, is something that begins, you can see it from beginning to end. So
But you're also creating an experience for people, and I think that's the other side of it as well.
Yeah, it's not just food. That, you know. It's that connection.
Yeah, mm, yeah, definitely.
So I think you know, there's a lot of sustainability happening in the hospitality industry these days, and that's been a push from the. That's where the consumers have pushed. They've put a lot of pressure on chefs, and chefs have put a lot of pressure then on their suppliers to make sure that circle is happening. But you know, I think today we're seeing quite smart menus. You know, there's a lot of ingredients that are getting used not once, not twice, but three or four times and getting recycled. Kind of and so that really reduces the carbon footprint, the use of products, the amount of waste. And so that is helping the hospitality business to really shrink their footprint on the, you know, carbon spectrum, waste spectrum and those sides of things.
Well, you'd be surprised how much people waste. And things that can be done from waste.
Mm.
So, I mean, we use... At work, we use the grains from the brew house. Mm. We put them back into breads.
Yeah.
We make spice mixes. We make all sorts of things, and only not for anything other than it kind of just doesn't sit right to make rubbish, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's better to try and use it up as best you can.
Definitely.
You know, regardless of what it is.
Yeah,
and like so, ways to do it. I think there's also like this, you know, modern living, and especially me. I'm an apartment liver these days, and a lot of people may be listening to us right now. It's like, oh, I live in an apartment or I live in the city, you know, we can't do this, we can't reduce our waste. But you know, I'm about to say worm farms are great ideas, you know, and that doesn't have to mean that you have to have a back garden. You know, most apartment buildings have a communal area, you know, you can put a little garden there. If you talk to co-op and said, oh, I want to get a little herb garden going there and a little worm farm, I'd say 9 times out of 10, they'll work with you and try and get that going. And that's going to be great for the whole apartment building. All of a sudden, you're not throwing out your potato skins or your carrots peeling or anything like that. Back into that, into your herb garden. And herbs is something that I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
Growing your own herbs for some reason. I think if you don't have to go to the supermarket once a week, spend $5 for those two bunches of herbs.
That are generally wilted anyway.
Wilted. You throw out on Sunday anyway. You're like, oh, I didn't use that coriander. Right. Out it goes. Or, oh, the rosemary's all buggered now. You know, so that's something that I really think for sustainability measures, something as simple as a herb box on your window.
Yeah, that's
done,
great.
You know? Yeah.
We're going to talk a little bit more about this. We're also going to have Neil Prentice from Mundara joining us on the phone, and we're going to take a break and listen to some messages from our sponsors.
Joy 94.9 has a huge range of programs available for podcast. In fact, Joy is one of the largest podcasting communities on community radio. If you haven't checked out our podcasting service, you're missing out. Visit joy.org.au, click on the podcast tab, and you'll find a list of Joy programs regularly sharing the best interviews, news, and reviews. There's tens of thousands of hours for you to enjoy, so check it out now, joy.org.au.
Welcome back to Cravings. It's 29 minutes past 1, and currently 17 degrees in Melbourne. We're expecting a top of 19. We've got Linton Tepp and Don Marzano in the studio with me today, and we now have Neil Prentice on the phone. We've called him through out at Mundara, out of the Gippsland area. Neil, can you hear me?
Yes, I can indeed.
Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely pleasure.
And you grow grapes specifically for wine, is that right?
Yeah, so we grow mostly Pinot Noir at Mundara in Gippsland.
Yeah.
So way up in the hills near Walhalla, so quite high, quite cool. And it seems to suit Pinot Noir.
Yeah, and you also produce Wagyu beef, is that right?
Yeah, so for almost, no, more than 20 years now, my parents sort of have the farm next door to the vineyard, and 20 years ago I sort of convinced them to get into Wagyu and help them buy genetics and gave them advice, and also with my background in working in restaurants, I sort of helped them get to market. So, you know, 20 years ago we started selling grass-fed, or initially grain-fed, and then ultimately grass-fed Wagyu into restaurants in Melbourne.
Okay. And how do you keep it sustainable as far as the practices that you employ in your businesses to keep that going from an environmental point of view?
The vineyard's been biodynamic since we started in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, not for any altruistic reasons. Really, because I thought it was a better way to grow grapes. So, for me, sustainability has a coincidence of, a pleasant coincidence of quality. So, when you want to do things at the best, at the finest quality you can, at the pointy end of quality, it is coincidentally, if I can pronounce it properly, coincidentally sustainable.
Yep.
And that's a really interesting sort of thing to me. And I would definitely agree with you.
It's all part of the process, and it's all part of that quality side of things. And if it's not quality every step of the way, it's not quality. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, what Neil's touching on there as well, between the relationships between quality and sustainability, is that with sustainability, you obviously have to take a lot more care of your, you know, resources and ingredients. You have to be there on the ground taking care of your crop, your, you know, herd. And so that means you are putting more effort into it and more love into your, what you're going to then pass on to the consumer.
Absolutely. Which is important to, you know, and again, a lot of people don't actually see that, unfortunately, and that's where the whole sort of process suffers in a way, I guess, if that's the right word. You know, you see...
You always see it in the quality of the product.
At the end of the day, absolutely. Yeah, but it's just making sure that people are educated about that and that they understand what that is and how that affects the actual product.
I think people have to start coming to the realization that with the fortunate circumstances we have in Australia with our beautiful produce, we also have to be expected to pay for that. You know, anything that's created on large scale, you know, and poor qualities and mass produced is going to be cheaper, but it's not necessarily as good for you. You know, it may be GMO, it may be using lots of pesticides, herbicides, all that type of stuff. And, you know, it may save you money, but at the end of the day, it's not going back into the community we want it to go back into, and it's not going to be as good for your body in the long
run. That's right. It's interesting. And yeah, it's one of those things, too, where it's the long-term side of things, you know. I mean, if you do something like that once or twice, it's not a big deal, but it's that long-term and that continuous side effect, if that's the right word for it.
Yeah, and I think what...
Yeah, hopefully if you... Hopefully, if you do things properly, you'll be doing it long-term.
Yeah.
For us, it's always been about making decisions that are about 10 and 20 years' time. You know, even I'm well into my 50s now, I keep thinking of things that are going to not really have an immediate effect, but that are going to have an effect in 10 years' time and 20 years' time in terms of the quality of the genetics that we're using. Now, I'm stupid enough now to be trying to grow grapes from... seed.
Right. How's that working?
You know, another two or three generations. It's going really well.
Oh, good. Okay.
But it's another two or three generations until that's really going to pay off.
Yeah.
God knows if anybody wants to keep doing it after I fade away.
talk about a legacy.
Yeah.
Definitely. Absolutely.
That's awesome.
And as a producer, Neil, I mean, what do you find the biggest roadblocks are for you as far as... you know, being a producer in Australia and trying to get your product to market, is there anything that stands out as being an issue that, if it were fixed, it would make things a lot easier?
Well, with the beef, there's one clear issue, and that's PrimeSafe, who are... it doesn't affect restaurants so much because they're governed by local councils.
Sure.
But if you're going to retail meat in Victoria, you're governed by PrimeSafe, who... Am I allowed to say arsehole on the radio?
You just did. We don't have a second delay, but that's okay.
you know, they're just a bunch of officious pricks. And most good restaurants in Melbourne are actually buying their meat from Sydney and from Adelaide, from Vic's in Sydney.
Right.
And Richard Gunner in Adelaide.
That's interesting.
Because PrimeSafe have managed to shut down most of the decent wholesalers in Melbourne.
Right.
And the retailers. So, you know, if you want to go out and buy dry-aged beef in Melbourne, it's nigh on impossible unless someone's... And there are a couple of people, and I won't mention them so they don't get in trouble, but there are a couple of people circumventing the laws in the same way that, you know, milk producers had to circumvent the laws and sell bath milk to be able to get people to drink decent milk in Victoria. So, yes, there's certainly a huge problem with PrimeSafe. There was a review that the Labor government put in place 18 months ago, and it changed things a little, but not significantly. So, yes, PrimeSafe, the major hurdle to quality meat in Victoria.
Just out of curiosity, I'm a bit ignorant on why they would be closing down places. What's the purpose that they're shutting them down?
The thing they're most frightened of is dry aging of beef or dry aging of meat in general.
Right.
And it affects me with beef. What dry aging does is a couple of things. Firstly, the cell walls break down, so it makes tough meat tender. And so for a little while, we were selling old purebred cows, so 12 and 14-year-old cows, which usually were referred to as choppers and ended up as mincemeat, but had the potential to be fabulous. So we were dodgily dry-aging them for sort of 60 days, a little bit like some great Spanish cow meat, which Cornish sort of advised me about.
Yeah.
And the meat was absolutely fabulous. So you get the tenderness from the cell walls breaking down, but the other thing you get is the production of glutamic acid, which is the evil MSG. But it's also, you know, chefs instinctively see it in mushrooms and dried tomatoes, and consumers see it in champagne and Cooper's Red. It's that sort of autolyzed glutamate, and you get the production of glutamates in dry-aged beef after about, or meat in general, after about 21 days. But PrimeSafe see that as a dangerous process, so you're not allowed to do it in Victoria. But you're allowed to bring in dry-aged beef from South Australia or New South Wales if you're a restaurant in Melbourne.
And they're processing it the same way?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah, it doesn't make sense, does it?
Safe. Well, it's a little bit about... if there are similarities with the raw milk cheese argument in Victoria and Australia, where you know the food standards Australia and New Zealand have a recommended protocol that we could employ in Victoria to consume or to produce and consume raw milk. It's legal to do it in New Zealand, so you can consume raw milk in New Zealand. We have a common food standards authority, but we can't do it in Australia, yet we can still import the raw milk and the raw milk cheese and raw milk cream from New Zealand.
That's crazy. It doesn't make any sense.
So it's bureaucracy. The wine industry, I'm ranting, but the wine industry faced some similar problems a few years ago, and several producers, with Max Allen as kind of cheerleader, were harassing the Australian Wine and Brandy Corporation. And bugger me, they actually reacted, changed things overnight, and we've now seen the Australian industry turn around from, you know, in England and the UK, Jancis Robinson and people like that were saying that our industry had become boring, and they're saying that it's become vibrant again because producers have been encouraged by a great export market. So now we've got, you know, young people with beards making natural wine and finding a market for that in the UK. So that's fabulous.
Well, I only read a story the other day that Australia is tipped to become the best wine producer in the world, you know, and the most creative.
And it makes sense because there's a lot of good things going on here from that point of view. And I think it's quite interesting. I mean, I moved here 21 years ago from New York and northern New Jersey. And when I moved here, a lot of the food, you know, it seemed that the inspiration was coming from outside. Where now that's turned around dramatically. People are looking here for inspiration and kind of that new next thing. And
well, absolutely. Like, thanks to chefs like Dom and all these, you know, we put it back to, like, as well, our producers. You know, we got some really funky, cool, young producers out there and older producers are doing amazing things. Yeah. But back to what Neil's saying, I think, you know, a good point there, you know, overall, without doing a broad stroke of the brush, is that policy really needs to get behind our, you know, agriculturalists and aquaculturists. You know, we really need to start preserving our industry because, you know, it is tough. And over the past 40 years, because of, you know, a lot of policy going the wrong way and, you know, the way that society has evolved in Australia, we've pushed a lot of people away from the country. You know, there's been rural urban migration for the last 30 years that has left the agricultural industry decimated, you know, and, you know, that's why recently there was such a big debate on the backpacker tax because, you know, that's such a, you know, lifeblood of the industry now. But, you know, I don't want to get sidetracked too much into politics because we could talk about that all week. But I think, you know, we really need to get back, you know, put some pressure, you know, as consumers again, not only on our big retailers, but also in our, you know, politicians to start getting behind and putting in some common sense policy to support people like Neil getting his Victorian beef into Victorian restaurants.
That's right, which is that whole local thing. Yeah. That's all about, you know. We've got to get a couple of more messages, community service messages, and we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Anna De Silva, and you're listening to Cravings with Pete Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Okay, and we're back. We've got Linton and Dom and Neil on the phone. A little overzealous on those messages. A couple played out of sync, but that's all right. Just getting back to what we were talking about before. You know, you're talking about government policy and things like that. And you know, it's interesting because you're doing a bit of research on the show. I was looking at other industries that have been supported by the government in when they were having hard times. And some of those industries are non-existent in Australia anymore. For example, the car manufacturing.
Yeah.
And while that, I understand why it was done and to keep jobs happening, you know, we've got, you know, farms and things like that in this country and jobs that are related to that too that are never going to go away.
Yeah.
Hopefully will never go away. I mean, they're here and, you know, it's on the land, it's all that sort of thing. And you just wonder why so much money is provided for one industry and there's another industry that almost looks like it's completely overlooked.
Absolutely. You know? You see it forever. You know, something that I was reading about the other day, which is worrying, you know, there's no doubt, you call me biased, but Dom and yourself, Tad, and Neil, you can all comment on it. I think Australia has some of the best seafood in the world, you know.
I agree.
You know, especially our southern Asia, our cold water seafood. Oh, but don't get me wrong, you know, I'm from the territory, Barramundi, you know, you put that stuff against the seafood of the world, it's going to be up there with the best of them.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the sad thing is Australia's a net importer of seafood. And how scary is that, you know? Like all these frozen seafood goods coming from overseas, you know, and it's decimating our local industry, aquaculture industry.
And not only that, we've got no idea about the quality of how that product was actually farmed or you know, and you see some of the reports of how it is done and it's just ruining the sea, you know.
Well,
shocking.
And haven't read into it a great deal, but I saw there's some white spot, I think they referred to it, in prawn farms found in Queensland, and that it's not due to the seafood itself but due to the food pellets coming in from overseas.
Of course, it's amazing how that gets into the food chain it has an impact. So it's really important to be aware of that.
And another reason, bring it back about the whole reason why we're having this conversation today is local, you know.
That's right.
I'm just so passionate about it because I've seen family and friends, you know, banks take their farms because, you know, they can't sell to the local crowd. And, it's, you know, North Australia is a prime example of it with the beef industry. We can't sell Brahmins to an Australian. So, you know, we historically eat Bos Taurus, which is, you know, Herefords, Angus, those European breeds. And so the North Australian cattle industry, you know, we can't get our beef into the markets. And so when, you know, there's some instability in the international markets, they're all affected by it, you know. It just comes back to try and support the local market.
Definitely. And you know, they take their farms away, but it's also their home. It's not just their farm, you know. It creates a huge problem that is, you know, unsupported in the country.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
And
that touches on another subject, you know, with my work for Food Bank, you know, some of the fastest growing population into poverty is the agricultural sector, you know, because it's been decimated years through poor policy, natural disasters, that, you know, they find themselves in a position, okay, 1 year the crop gets wiped out, second year policy, third year labour, so they don't get three crops or three herds or whatever they may be producing off. So all of a sudden they see themselves putting out money for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, you know, talk about droughts, they can go up to 10
absolutely
without getting a crop off.
Yep.
And so all of a sudden they find themselves in a position, they've had no money come in for 10 years, they've been paying the running bills, and all of a sudden they're like, well, hang on, we can't even feed ourselves at the moment.
or make a profit, like a living, to do the normal things that that you need to do. I mean,
school education and medical is a big one for the farming community, and that sort of back in the 70s and 80s really drove an exodus from there into the large towns and cities was for those, amenities that people want in modern society.
Yeah, it's interesting. Go on, Neil.
It's interesting that the talk of sustainability has turned very quickly to economic sustainability just as much as environmentally sustainable. Because if you're not economically sustainable, what's going to happen is large agriculture is going to take over. And we're already seeing the industrialisation of meat farming, whether it's chickens or beef or anything like that. Feedlot beef, there's enormous problems with because of subtherapeutic antibiotics, and we're getting resistant bacteria in hospitals now as a consequence of that. But they're also the consequences of farmers selling out to large agriculture, so big investment companies that will own a feedlot that has 3,000 or 4,000 steers on it, on all eating grain, which is not terribly natural for steers to be eating grain. And we keep running into this economic sustainability. I honestly don't know the answer. For our family, it's been about getting out of a commodity market and selling directly to restaurants or through a wholesaler to do the logistics directly to restaurants. So it's a difficult thing for farmers that don't have that access to the market because they're forced to sell to the supermarket.
What do we all think of co-op? We've seen those sort of practices work in other countries. I've thought there's something that, may work well for all the farmers that we love and know, the small, bespoke, organic, sustainable product getting their way into the markets.
I think that's a good idea. It's a way of making it more sustainable if it's managed properly. Like, that's the main thing, having the basis, the bottom line worked out properly so that everybody benefits from it.
Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah.
But I think it's also...
Like, economically sustainable, the co-ops need to concentrate on quality, because if they're not concentrating on quality, they end up in that commodity market where the cheapest price is what sells something.
Yeah. And also, now you mentioned it before, farmers being forced to sell their farms because they have no money to do anything with to large multinationals. But most of those large multinationals are foreign companies. Mm. And, foreign investors, the properties they can buy, like housing properties and things like, they're limited. And it just seems, well, why aren't they limiting this other thing for the same reasons?
Yeah.
It just seems there's rules for different industries.
Yeah.
And there really should be some sort of guideline that covers everything.
Absolutely. And it's something that I think would be a sad thing to happen within Australia, because I believe, a large part of our history, along with our Indigenous background, is that, Australia is a rich farming country.
Definitely.
I think we got to a certain point in our history on the back of wheat and sheep farmers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to lose that because they're getting pushed out for whatever reason, weather, climate, political circumstances, trade, and foreign businesses investing, that'd be a really sad day for everyone. And then that's when the consumers in the city will realize, but it may be too late.
But and also adding to that too is recently, in the news that we've got a natural gas shortage in Australia. Australia is the largest exporter of natural gas. So and part of that flow on effect is the largest wool producer in the country might have to close its doors because of that. And it's insane. It's insanity. Yeah. And you wonder, who's in charge of the zoo if that's sort of the deals that are being done. You look at Norway, they're sitting on all their resources. There's a future fund for their people. And it makes you think, well, we're in the same situation and we've got a smaller population, and that could be happening here too. But for some reason, it's just not. And I don't know. There's a lot of things you can go on, but it's just
shorter election cycles that drive that sort of thought. Yeah, we've got a new government every 3 years, and perhaps a new prime minister every 18 months.
Well, that's a whole other issue.
Drives very short-term thinking.
Well, that's right, but that short-term thinking damage, you know, does a lot of damage long-term. And but it's just that flow-on effect, you know. It affects the wool industry and all that sort of thing. You know?
It's something that I think it isn't realized with, you know, as simple as going to the Prahran markets, the Queen Victoria markets, the South Melbourne, your local farmers markets in Dandenong or Wangaratta, wherever it may be in Australia, by going to them, you're supporting the local community and putting money back in their pockets because it is creating local business and jobs. And, you know, the government always talks about that, but at the end of the day, you have the power to create and keep that going. Just by simply buying, you know, corn's in season now. Go and buy some corn from the farmer's market, put it on the barbecue, herb butter on it, everyone's happy.
Well, that's right. And but it is, you're absolutely right. It's the small businesses and those smaller producers and things that are actually driving the economy. And, and you know, like doing this, your artisan Christmas market, you know, that's putting that on a showcase so that it's available and people will know about it and they can, you know, experience it and taste it and feel it.
I think we also connect a little bit more with a small business owner. We're either their neighbour, our kids all go to school together, it's their our friend, or we know they're all part of our community. But buying into a big, you know, multinational, buying their products or using their whatever it is that they do. I mean, I don't know. I don't
it doesn't
kind of break bread with those CEOs. It's not mine.
No, definitely not. You know,
so
no.
When it's put to me like that, that's how I say it. That's how I see it.
Yeah.
So kind of making that affiliation, you know, that those guys down at the market that get up early and are doing what they do because they love it, you know, that's where that connection can be for everybody.
Yeah.
So, definitely.
That connection, is a key point, Dom, you know. And so you know, I want people from the cities meeting, you know, Neil out on his farm, you know, seeing the beef and the Pinot Noir that he's producing. I think that's a connection we have to make again.
Definitely.
Is the city dweller back onto the farm. Because once upon a time we either had a mum, dad, uncle, auntie, granddad, grandma, cousins on the farm. And this day and age, I think that is a really small window now of that connection back to the rural industry.
Absolutely. And
one of the connections I think we miss is that consumers miss the, or just don't understand how seasonality affects what's available. But
well, it's interesting because it's talked about all the time, you know, when you speak to chefs and things like that, and you just wonder why it doesn't actually filter down as like it should.
I think, you know, The large supermarkets, you know, as I said, it's easy to blame them and we need to do more research ourselves as consumers. But if every day we see potatoes year round, oranges, pumpkins, I think, you know, we're just tricked into thinking they should be there.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the issue that supermarket chains have created. And that's why farmers markets need to be pushed and need to be the start of your shopping week.
Yeah, that's right. And even with, I mean, fortunately we do have the labels now, so if you're in a supermarket and you see oranges from California or something, I mean, you can pretty much guarantee they're not in season in Australia for whatever reason. So you can have asparagus
from Peru.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. So you can, you know, you have to think outside the box that way a little bit, if you're able to. But it's just one of those things where a lot of it seems quite obvious, but then again there's a lot, you know, more deeper issue around it that needs to be sort of addressed and dealt with, I think.
Yeah. But I think, you know, a key word that would probably come out of this conversation is education of the consumer, you know, and we need to start. I'm a consumer, you know, we're all consumers here. So we need to start taking some responsibility and pushing the blame onto the big suppliers, the big multinationals, and start making an informed decision. Like, right, I'm getting down to Prahran on 6:30 on Sunday. I'm going to sacrifice my sleep in because that's going to help, you know, Gary, that's going to help Chad, you know, turn is going to help the pig farmer, or that's going to help vanilla beans from Queensland. You know, there's all this local industry that can be supported just from the local farmers market.
Absolutely. And I think when it comes to, and I find it interesting when it comes to these other issues that are on the larger scale as far as supporting farmers from policy levels and things like that, I wonder why there's not more outrage that it's not being done. I don't understand why there's not more outrage. Like, we all talk about it and we all know it's there, but it just seems that the power that the powers that be just don't want to listen to it for some reason. I mean, there are a few that do, obviously, but I don't understand from a people point of view why there's not more outrage. I find that a bit,
especially because it goes against the prize identity that we like to put ourselves next to as a foodie nation. You know, Australia likes to think it's pretty well known as being connected to the food industry and we're the connoisseurs of brunch, let's face it.
Yeah, definitely. That's right. That's absolutely right.
And, one of the things in terms of getting a connection from farmers to consumers, one of the things that farmers have been gun-shy of, and I'll admit this myself, is we're frightened of telling people we kill animals.
Yeah.
We're frightened of using the word kill. We're frightened of abattoir. And we get
Neil, sorry to interrupt you, Neil. We're going to have to, we're out of time, unfortunately. Thank you guys all for coming in today. I really appreciate Linton and Dom for coming to the studio, Neil on the phone. Coming up next is the Escape Pod.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.